Hello, and welcome to the latest ICTJ podcast. Today we'll be speaking with Ruben Carranza, director of ICTJ's Reparative Justice Program, about the significance of apologies during transitional justice processes. Ruben recently completed work on a new ICTJ report on the subject entitled More Than Words, Apologies as a Form of Reparation. Ruben, welcome.
Thank you, Dan.
What is the real significance of apologies in the context of reparations for victims of massive human rights abuse? How should they be delivered and by whom to have a chance of being meaningful?
Apologies are a form of reparations. They are not the only form of reparations. There are other forms, both symbolic and material, that can be given. But apologies are significant because they're the most direct and explicit way of acknowledging the experiences of victims and the responsibility of the state in many cases, or of individual perpetrators in some cases, to repair the harms that were done to the victims. At the same time, just giving an apology can be the commencement in most cases, or the culmination of a process of recognition and acknowledgement, and a longer process of transitional justice. So the overall significance of apologies is that they are just not words spoken, written, delivered to victims, but they're a commitment to the future and they're an acknowledgement of what happened in the past.
And this new report makes clear that a focus on apologies should not be to the detriment of material reparations. Can you tell us more about the relationship between the two? And perhaps give examples of where apologies actually enhanced material reparations or vice versa?
Apologies can heal victims. They can help heal even physical wounds or the loss of life. But they can never bring back that life. They cannot completely erase or if at all remove the scars of what happened in the past. And for that to happen, it's important that apologies and other symbolic forms of reparations be accompanied by material forms of reparations. On the other hand, just giving material forms of reparations, especially giving money to victims, is insufficient. In many cases, in fact, victims think that it's an insult to give money for the kinds of human rights violations that can never be compensated with money. The forced disappearance of a family member, the experience of a woman who's sexually violated during political detention. These are harms, these are losses that cannot be compensated by money. They can be addressed by other material forms of reparations, but an apology for these acts to the victims of these acts, to the survivors, to the family members of the victims, is an acknowledgement that the state will do something, will not just say sorry, but will give victims, families of victims, and the survivors themselves the kind of help they need to go on with their lives. So it's important that this symbolic form of reparation, apologies, and the material forms of reparations that should be given by the state happen, if not together or simultaneously, happen in a sequence that assures victims that they are being given attention, that they are being cared for. And you have good examples as well as not so good examples of this happening. In Chile, for instance, after the president of Chile, after the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet ended, gave an apology, Patricio Aylwin gave a very explicit apology on behalf of the state to victims of torture, disappearances, and killings. He then committed that, number one, other state institutions should apologize to victims, referring to the military, the police, the intelligence services. And he then also carried out a comprehensive process of providing material reparations, including healthcare, pensions, memorialization for survivors and families of victims. So that's how you combine these two. On the other hand, you have situations where material forms of reparations were provided, but the apologies were either not seen as sufficient or were not given at all. And an example in a way is Morocco, where a reparations program has been implemented by the state for violations committed during the reign of the former king, the father of the current king. But the Truth Commission of Morocco itself did not ask the current king, the royal family, the family that has ruled Morocco for a significant period of time, the Truth Commission did not ask the family to express an apology. They simply asked officials to do that, and the officials did not really speak on behalf of the state, of the rulers of the country. And that impacts on the delivery of material reparations, because it's seen as this reluctance to come forward and acknowledge. So there's always a relationship that has to be balanced between simply acknowledging symbolically through words and materially acknowledging through services, through compensation, through rehabilitation, survivors as well as families of victims.
Apologies given on behalf of the state can sometimes be a vehicle of political accommodation rather than a genuine act of acknowledgement and redress. Can you discuss some of the cases of such politicization of apologies and the impact this has had on victims and on the transitional justice processes they occurred under?
Well, apologies are sometimes given for reasons other than a heartfelt recognition that victims deserve them and a heartfelt acknowledgement that the person or institution apologizing is accepting its responsibility for what happened. Apologies can be given because the person apologizing is on trial for a crime and expects either to be declared innocent or for the sentence to be reduced. And we've seen this, for example, in the Tomas Lubanga case in the ICC, where precisely this question was litigated, and the question of whether an apology should or should not be taken into account. We've seen this legal issue also raised in Cambodia at the extraordinary chambers that tried Khmer Rouge leaders, where apologies were given by the accused, and the question was whether that should matter in the length of the sentence imposed. So there's always a different interest in some of these cases other than simply apologizing. In some cases, the interest might not even be to apologize, but as your question brings up, it's a political accommodation to address a political objective, but using an apology as a way of getting there. And a good example that we currently should look at is the recent apology issued by the Japanese Prime Minister to comfort women, or women who were victims of sexual slavery during World War II, from South Korea. There was this agreement between the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and the current president of South Korea for Japan to apologize to comfort women. But from my perspective, the apology was not meant really to acknowledge Japan's responsibility to South Korean comfort women, but to begin this process of bolstering a military alliance between Japan and South Korea, brokered by the United States, because of the threats that they perceive coming from China. And China itself has pointed out that the apology of Japan to South Korean comfort women seems to be selective. Why South Korean women? Why not all comfort women who were victims across Asia, for example? So in that example, we see that the apology is being used, and that the supposed acknowledgement of victims and survivors is really secondary, if at all important, to what the apology really is meant to do, to accommodate political interests, and in that case, even a military agenda. And that, in fact, speaks badly about the kind of motivation for apologies being made there.
I want to move on to another example of an apology, which is from Kenya. In 2014, Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, apologized for past wrongs committed by the Kenyan government, successive Kenyan governments dating back a number of decades, and committed to establish a reparations fund. However, Kenyatta's government has failed to successfully prosecute many of the crimes committed during the 2007-2008 post-election violence, denying real accountability to many victims. In that case, how should an apology, even one that's very well worded, be assessed?
We've done work with survivors of human rights violations in Kenya that go far back as 1956, their independence, and survivors of more recent political violence, such as the election post-election violence in 2007. We've discussed with survivors and as well as with victims' families what they thought about the apology extended by President Kenyatta in his speech to the country last year. There have been mixed reactions, but many of the reactions have welcomed the apology, and I think that's a reasonable response from victims. But what's important to underline here is that, at least in the case of Kenyatta and the apology to Kenyan victims, it was accompanied by a promise. The promise was to establish a restorative justice fund and then to implement certain forms of reparations funded by this money, and at the same time to initiate several other projects in the different parts of Kenya where many of these victims reside. So in that context, it's important to use the apology to propel the implementation of reparations. In that Kenyan context, it's important to also not rely on the apology as a way of ending accountability, but instead to rely on it as a way of opening up spaces for accountability. In the same speech, President Kenyatta essentially announced that he would not proceed with the investigation of the crimes committed during the post-election violence of 2007. And I don't think that victims, by acknowledging that he apologized, also agree that that should be the end of it, that there should be no longer accountability for those crimes. So just beyond the Kenyan example, I think it's important to consider apologies as not simply the culmination of a process, although I said earlier that it can be the culmination of a transitional justice process, but should also be seen as an anchor on which activism, not just among victims and survivors, but by civil society activists, by human rights advocates, can be used to either mobilize society as a whole to pursue transitional justice, or to get the government, the state, perpetrators even, to acknowledge in more detail through the provision of truth, through, as in Kenya, the pursuit of criminal accountability, transitional justice measures. So the overall agenda isn't to get an apology. The overall agenda is to pursue justice, and an apology is one way that acknowledges the need for that justice to happen.
Why is the process by which apologies are decided upon and delivered, and whether victims are included in that process, for example, why is that so important to their overall impact?
Apologies are meant for victims. They're not meant for some anonymous group of people. They're not meant for society as some kind of amorphous whole. They are meant for specific people who suffered specific kinds of harm. While they may also be meant for society traumatized by war, by massive violence, by displacement, for instance, not all victims are equal in the sense that not all victims suffer the same level of violation, not all victims suffer the same economic and social consequences as a result of human rights violations. And so apologies are directed at specific groups of victims. Now, there are ways to time apologies, there are ways to sequence apologies and material reparations, and those are important to consider because it may be possible that not all victims can be the beneficiaries of reparations at any given moment, that not all victims of a particular violation or a particular incident will be given apologies in a specific speech. But what is important is that the victims for whom a specific apology are intended to be given to are asked whether this apology will help them, whether this way of delivering an apology, whether in writing, in a speech, on paper, the kind of language to be used, to ask them how they might feel if it were delivered in a specific way, if it were given to them in a specific place. For instance, in Indonesia, when the Dutch government decided that it would apologize for a series of massacres that happened during the Dutch colonization period in Indonesia, there was debate over whether the apology for these massacres should be given in the different places where those massacres happened, or whether they will be given, as they were at the end given, at the Dutch embassy in Indonesia. You could have a debate over whether that outcome was better or not, but the fact is that victims were hardly consulted about where the apology should be given. On the other hand, in Latin America, in Guatemala, for example, victims were consulted about where the apology would be delivered. The location of a massacre located in a remote area of the country, the vice president actually went there to deliver the apology, and that sends a message that the state and its officials are willing to go to victims, literally in these cases, to beg forgiveness. And that's the last point in response to your question. An apology is not a unilateral statement. It's a begging of forgiveness. You ask for forgiveness. Who are you asking? You're asking victims to forgive you, to forgive these institutions, to forgive the state. And so it's up to victims to consider whether they should or whether they can forgive. For some of them, they can. There will be others who can't. There will be others still who won't. But at the end of this process of apologizing and planning apologies, it's victims who matter. It's not the person apologizing. It's not the institution itself that's the most important role player in this process. It's the victim. And so it's important to involve victims' families in the technical aspects of the apology, in how it will be given, like I said, the language, the form, in when it will be given. Will it be given on the occasion that an event that took place in the past is commemorated? Where it will be given, at the place where it happened, or in some other significant area near a memorial, or when a museum is unveiled, for example, and whether it is accompanied by a commitment to do something in the future. And this is what we discussed at the beginning, whether it's accompanied by a commitment to establish a program of material reparations and other forms of symbolic reparations. And even in that aspect of it, victims need to be consulted, because as I said, they're the ones who will get the apology. They're the ones from whom forgiveness is being begged, and they're the ones who decide in the end whether this is justice or whether there needs to be more to be done.
We have a few minutes left. I was wondering, just as a final question, if you could tell us a little bit about the relationship between apologies and reconciliation.
In many countries, we've seen truth and reconciliation commissions, for example, where truth and reconciliation are supposed to be the outcomes of this truth-seeking process. But in other countries still, we've also seen how reconciliation is seen as a goal of transitional justice, as something that ought to happen when you pursue a transitional justice process. The problem in some cases is that reconciliation is seen as something that ought to happen not only in a short time, but that it happens because you did something. And in some cases, it's expected that it should happen because the state apologized or perpetrators of human rights violations said sorry to victims. I think that's a misguided notion of the relationship between apologies and reconciliation. Reconciliation is a process. It may happen. It may end up in reconciliation. But an apology should be given because the state or the officials or the perpetrators apologizing sincerely recognize their responsibility. It should not be given because they hope victims will reconcile with them or forgive them, and then, as I mentioned earlier, lead to the mitigation of a sentence or even to amnesties or reconciliation with legal consequences. We've seen examples where in Indonesia, the entitlement to reparations was anchored on victims accepting a gesture of reconciliation with perpetrators. We've seen this example proposed in Nepal, where reconciliation rituals, where perpetrators are supposed to ask for forgiveness, will happen and victims are supposed to participate. And I think these situations are unfair to victims because they put victims in a situation where their rights to truth, to reparations, to justice are made dependent on participating in a process of reconciliation in quotation marks, when what's more important, if the state or officials really want to acknowledge victims, is to do it sincerely, to do it almost unilaterally and unequivocally, you know, without condition. And so apologies should not be conditioned on victims agreeing to reconcile with the state, with perpetrators, or with anyone else. They should be, as I said, meant to beg forgiveness and leave it to victims to decide whether they will forgive or whether they expect something more.
Ruben Carranza, thank you.
You're welcome.